This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
It's Creature Feature, a spotlight on one of the Wildlife Hospital Dunedin's extra special guests.
All right, well, I've given you a warning about today's edition of Creature Feature. Just a heads up, you might not love the creature or creatures we're going to be talking about today, but I tell you what, they're essential. I'm sure we'll hear more about this. Jordana White joins us from Dunedin Wildlife Hospital. Morena, lovely to have you with us, Jordana.
Morena, thanks for having me back.
Spill the beans.
All right, today we're talking about parasites.
Yay!
I think they are probably they're arguably our tiniest patients or guests, or they're not really our patients, but
don't tell me you treat them.
Well, inadvertently, I suppose we do, because if we can save our patient that perhaps is acting as a host to a parasite, we save the parasites
you
too.
Indeed, you
yeah.
do.
So they're all part and parcel of it. So listen, we're all going to learn a lot. Some of it's going to be mind blowing. Some of it's going to be kind of weird, but it's all going to be cool.
Cool. This sounds like another edition of Creature Feature to me.
That's right. So parasites, of course, live in other organisms. Those organisms are their hosts. I think we all kind of know that sort of basic bit about parasites. And they, of course, depend on their host organisms for survival. Here's the first mind-blowing fact I have for you, Jeff, is it is quite possible that 40 to 50% of all animals on Earth are actually parasites.
So they're animals of some sort.
Yes. Yeah. And I would have thought that it was insects, but then you have to think about the fact that insects, you know, I thought insects would be the biggest sort of, it would have the most number of animals on the planet, but insects also host parasites. So it's just like a Russian doll. We keep going smaller and smaller and smaller. So we aren't going to dwell on this part too much because I don't want people to lose too much sleep about it. But we have to kind of just deal with the fact and get over the fact that we also, as humans, host parasites. Okay, so we all, in our case, much like in wildlife, they can be good or bad parasites. We all kind of have some idea of what some of the bad ones are. So a tapeworm would be a really good example. We, as humans, we definitely don't want tapeworms. Not a cool thing to have. That's not good for your health. We try to avoid that. Thankfully, the chance of that happening to us is pretty slim. That's good. But we also have parasites that are beneficial. And a good example would be, don't lose sleep over this because it's really good, I promise. But we host teeny tiny little microscopic parasites on our skin that they come out at night and they're like, they hoover. Basically, they clean up harmful bacteria out of the pores of our skin. Okay, so that's a really good thing. You have to think of them as little nocturnal butlers that are doing the hoovering. So they can be good, they can be bad. In most of our cases, it's good. So wildlife, certainly no exception. Our patients host organisms, and there's loads and loads that once we start looking at them, we can learn from them. And little did I know, but over at the University of Otago, there is some world-class parasitology research happening. And we are really, really pleased to have contributed to some of that research by Drs. Bronwyn Presswell and Jerusha Bennett. So they are, with Ngāi Tahu and DOC permission, we are providing them the bodies, essentially, of our patients who don't survive. So we are able to release most of our patients back into the wild where they belong. Of course, some do pass away, and there's a lot to be learned from them before they're buried or cremated or used for traditional materials like weaving and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of good things happening here with the parasite research, and we've been able to contribute to that. So we've provided over 500 specimens to them, over 50 different species in the last few years. And what that's contributed has actually been surprisingly huge. So
parasites, presumably external and internal?
Primarily internal. That's what Drs. Presswell and Bennett are studying, are these internal parasites. So I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But first, I'm going to blow your mind again with some numbers. So the contribution that they've very busy in this lab that they have over the last 6 years, they have described 9 new species of parasites just off of the bodies that we've provided to them by our deceased patients. So 9 whole new species that nobody knew existed before, weren't described before, perhaps suspected existed before, but didn't know. And that they've been able to increase the known parasite species in New Zealand birds by over 33%.
Wow.
So it's pretty big deal.
Yeah.
So it's cool to be a part of that. Thankfully, we have pretty we do our thing, but we do contribute minorly to that. Now, this is, of course, an audio medium, and so I'm not going to spend a lot of time dwelling on this, but Jeff has some images for our listeners that he's going to post, I think, on your website or the Facebook or both, perhaps.
I'd love to put them up on the Facey. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah,
I think so, great images.
Yeah,
this electron microscope stuff.
Yeah, it's a super, super, super magnified scanning electron microscope. Bronwyn provided these images for us to have a look at. So these are some of the parasite species that she's found in New Zealand birds. This, if you need any kind of inspiration for a sci-fi creature, or you're interested in what perhaps creatures from other planets look like, to have a look at this image. It's bananas. There's all kinds of things happening there. They're weird and beautiful and totally unexpected. There's a huge variety of what these things look like. So go ahead and have a look at that.
They certainly are an inspiration for some who have made some of the scarier movies.
I feel like at least one of those in this image I've seen in some kind of sci-fi movie for sure. They must be an inspiration. Now, the scanning electron microscope goes, of course, really, really tiny. So I asked Bronwyn, you know, actually just how big are these creatures? So she's told me that some of them are as small as 2 to 3 micrometers. So a micrometer, of course, is 1/1000th of a millimeter. So my brain can't actually really even process how tiny that is. But just to give you just a comparison, the width of a human hair can be about 20 micrometers. Mm. So these are 2 to 3. So really, really, really tiny. So I had a chat with Bronwyn. She was wonderful to share a lot of her knowledge with me. And I just want to be clear, I'm going to screw a lot of these names up. I'm probably going to make some mistakes. All mistakes are mine and not hers. So apologies in advance to Bronwyn. So their team focuses on what's called helminth parasites. So you asked if they were internal or external. So these internal ones, the helminths are essentially worm parasites. So we would know them as roundworms, tapeworms, flukes, or this is my favorite, the thorny-headed worms.
Mm.
So if you're looking for a thorny-headed worm, go on to that image that Jeff's going to post on the Facebook and see if you can figure out which one it is. I think you'll be successful in figuring that out. And most of these worms are living in the stomachs or intestines of our patients, but they can sometimes be in other organs like kidneys, livers, hearts, and lungs. So tiny little guys. Now, you could assume that if they're finding parasites in our deceased patients, that the parasites would have contributed to their deaths, but that's, in fact, quite rarely the case. Like I said, they're often... you know, they can be good, these parasites. They can be bad, but they're often just neutral. So there's sort of a nice balance there between the parasite and the host.
Always about balance.
Yeah,
isn't
that's
it?
Right. Yeah. And there will be cases, in a healthy bird, the presence of parasites could be a good thing. It's a sign of a healthy kind of immune system. It's everything's well balanced, as you say. But they can certainly contribute to issues. So if there's something out of balance, for example, there's a seabird that perhaps isn't finding enough food or isn't finding the right nutrition. They're a bit weak, they're hungry, and they have parasites that then can suddenly sort of take over because that bird is weak. So it can actually contribute to illness or death in a bird. But generally speaking, we're not anti-parasite over at the Wildlife Hospital because for the most part, we can just all cruise along living with those things. But yeah, occasionally there'll be an overload, sort of like when we talked about the ticks in a previous episode. It can be fine. They can live with those, but sometimes they can get overloaded. So the reason that we want to participate in this kind of research and the reason that the University of Otago is looking at this is because studying parasites can tell us a lot about the health of our wildlife and the health of, for example, the marine environment, which is what they're focusing on at the moment, looking at seabirds. So a lot of the way our patients will pick up these parasites is in their food sources. So, for example, a seabird will eat a fish, and that fish is a host for a certain type of parasite. And then the birds will ingest that, and then they become the host. So you could, for example, this is really theoretical, so this don't take this straight up, but just theoretically, if you were to suddenly see the presence of a certain type of parasite in a penguin, a hoiho, that normally wouldn't be there, you would start asking, okay, where are they getting this and why? So you might start looking at, well, what would the normally be the host of this parasite? Oh, it's this kind of fish that a hoiho wouldn't normally be eating. What's happening? Why are they eating that? Is it because they're not getting enough of what they would normally eat for their nutritional balance, and now they've had to move to this other fish. What's happening to that food source for them? And you can start to kind of be an investigator. So really a teeny tiny investigator looking at the parasites to figure out what's happening in that marine environment. So it's quite actually a cool tool to use, and one that I certainly would never have thought of as something that we could use for conservation to figure out what's happening in an otherwise cryptic environment, because it's very difficult to figure out what's happening at sea.
One of the advantages of living in a university city, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's really cool that there's so much happening there. And the other way that we can get information back from the parasitologists is, for example, if they do find anything that's pathogenic in an endangered species or any species for that matter, they can flag that for us. So, for example, they found they've newly described a little ematode roundworm in the lungs of a Fiordland crested penguin, which hadn't been seen before. And since they discovered that, they have also found it in other penguin species that we've provided to them, including hoiho. So that is potentially a dangerous parasite for these penguin species. And as you know, hoiho are in a lot of trouble in terms of their threat classification. So now we know that we should be looking for that and necropsies and that kind of thing, and potentially perhaps be evaluating that as a contributor to any kind of respiratory disease or illness or death in penguins. So that's good, really good information to come back to us from that research. And now another upside that is probably a lot more fun is that because they're newly described and these researchers are the ones doing all this work and finding these new species, they get to name them, which I think is pretty cool. So I'll just share one name with you that brought. I'm going to totally screw this up, and this will be great for their Christmas party or whatever to hear me screw up this name. But the Latin name, okay, I'm going to take a deep breath before I do this. I'm going to screw that up. Diomenemenemenemenemendinarctos.
I'm not sure you should have even attempted that.
I should have practiced that 12 times before I came in.
I don't have it in front of me, listeners. No, I don't know whether she's anywhere near it or not.
No, not in the first. Dinarctos is the main thing that you need to know. It's a nematode, and I want all of you, when you check out this picture, and Jeff to look at the picture of the images that he's going to post of these parasites. It's the one that looks a little bit like a scary teddy bear. And dino in Latin means terrible, and arctos in Latin means bear. So it's terrible bear is the Latin name for this particular worm. So if we get a little bit fun, a little bit creative with the names, which is great.
Well, there's a lot of them to name, no doubt.
Yeah, well, so they have loads and loads more specimens waiting for them to process, so they could get quite good and creative. So, maybe if you want to, I don't know, if you're alumni and you want to donate to the parasitology research, maybe you'll get a parasite named after you, a tapeworm named after you. Wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't that just be lovely? it's an interesting insight into the symbiotic relationship between the wildlife hospital and other institutions in the city. And, of course, it's all contributing to worldwide learning as well, isn't it? All of it's important, no doubt. Some of the issues we've talked about today, balance and so forth, that's other aspects, climate change and what have you, also potentially contributing to some of the imbalances that we find and some of the causes of some of the troubles and some of the beautiful creatures that aren't doing so well at the moment.
Absolutely. And it's just also really goes to show that there is a lot of people that have a hand in helping improve outcomes for native wildlife, and we can get creative and work together and find interesting and innovative solutions or ways of looking at the problem.
Great stuff. I will check out our Facebook page later in the day, and you'll see some of these images. And actually, you know, they're not all just scary. They're all kind of beautiful as well.
I think they're fascinating. I really encourage people to check them out.
Thanks, Jordana, for planting that in my mind at 3 o'clock in the morning when I'm staring at the ceiling, imagining all the little parasites that are crawling around on my skin, cleaning out my pores. Thanks so much for that.
My pleasure.
Great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us here on our Creature Feature.
Got it.
The Wildlife Hospital Dunedin treats sick and injured native New Zealand species right here in the heart of Aotearoa's wildlife capital. Their expert veterinary team patches up more than 500 patients every year, returning the majority of them back to the wild where they belong. You can learn more about the hospital, including ways to support this charitable trust, at wildlifehospitaldunedin.org.nz. or follow their Facebook page for more fabulous creature content.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.